Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Julia Koivel. Welcome to the John Koivel Show. My dad has helped thousands of people around the world lead happier and more successful lives. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you already built your life, but now you need to shore up some weak spots, this show will help you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Today I want to share a text called, or what I call, What They Saw. What They Saw is the title of the text. And there seems to be, at least in my observation, a consistent pattern between leaders and followers. You're going to see in the next 45 minutes or so, there's some pretty big, unique opportunities that certain people have that can be copied and developed to change, I think, other people's lives. And I think that leaders see, at least some leaders see, what followers don't see. Leaders see what followers don't see. And leaders see what's ahead, and then they make decisions based on what they see. And if I can borrow a title by author Mark Sanborn, he says that you don't need a title to be a leader. So many people think that they need to have a role, or they need to have a CEO, or they need to have this long title behind their name to make themselves people that they think that they can lead, but you don't need a title at all. Chuck Swindoll writes, when George Allen moved to Washington, D.C. as head coach of the Redskins, he promised the nation's capital the moon. He told them it would be just a few seasons before he would develop the Redskins into a championship football team. He then promised them the Super Bowl by the second season. That's a pretty big promise. The team had a brilliant preseason that first year. Then, early in the regular season, they won several amazing victories. It appeared the Redskins were to be lifted from their common role of loser to the uncommon role of winner. As time passed, however, the inevitable occurred. They began to lose and lose and lose. The blame fell, at least in part, not on Coach George Allen, but on a quarterback named Sonny Jurgensen. In my opinion, one of the most gifted and effective quarterbacks to ever play the game. Jurgensen possesses a quality I deeply admire, Chuck Swindoll writes, personal security. It seems as though no one can intimidate Sonny Jurgensen. One day after a defeat, Sonny was getting ready to take a shower and go home, and a sports writer leaned over to him in the locker room and said, quote, say, Sonny, be honest now, he said. Don't all these off-the-wall remarks we write and all this public flack disturb you at least a little bit? Doesn't it make you want to quit when people throw things at you from the stands and when you get those dirty letters? Sonny leaned back and gave a big toothless grin and sighed, no, not really. I don't want to quit. He said, quote, I've been in the game long enough to know that every quarterback, every week of the season, spends his time either in the penthouse or in the outhouse. And I think that applies to many, many people who have a leadership role. Again, you don't have to be a leader by title to lead. Turn with me over to 1 Samuel chapter 15. 1 Samuel chapter 15, this is 11 centuries before Jesus was born. So we're talking quite a number of years ago. 1 Samuel chapter 15, starting in verse number 10. Then the word of the Lord came to Samuel saying, I regret that I have made Saul king. I'm in 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 11. I regret that I have made Saul king. For he has turned back from following me and has not carried out my commands. And Samuel was distressed and cried out to the Lord all night. Samuel rose early in the morning to meet Saul, and it was told Samuel, saying, Saul came to Carmel, and behold, he set up a monument for himself, then turned and proceeded on down to Gilgal. I'm in verse 13. Samuel said to Saul, and Saul said to him, "Blessed are you of the Lord, I have carried out my command of the Lord." But Samuel said, "What then is this bleeding of the sheep in my ears, and the lowing of the oxen which I hear?" Saul said, "They have brought them from the Amalekites," the enemy, by the way, for those who don't know, "for the people spared the best of the sheep and oxen to sacrifice to the Lord your God. But the rest we have utterly destroyed." There's always a but in excuses, if you notice that, but that's another sermon. Verse 16. Then Samuel said to Saul, "Wait, and let me tell you what the Lord said to me last night." And he said to him, "Speak." I'm in now verse 17 of 1 Samuel 15. Samuel said, Is it not true, though, you were little in your own eyes, you were made the head of the tribes of Israel? And the Lord anointed you king over Israel, and the Lord sent you on a mission. He said, go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are exterminated. This is Old Testament stuff. Is pretty deep, radical, R-rated material here. Verse 19. "Why then did you not obey the voice of the Lord, but rushed upon the spoil and did what was evil in the sight of the Lord?" I'm getting to a point. Bear with me. Verse 20. "Then Saul said to Samuel, I did obey the voice of the Lord, and went on to the mission on which the Lord sent me, and have brought back Agag, the king of Amalek, and have utterly destroyed the Amalekites." Here's the point that I'm trying to stress here in verse number 21. But the people took some of the spoil, sheep and oxen, the choices of the things devoted to destruction, to sacrifice to the Lord your God at Gilgal. And then verse 22 says, Samuel said, "Has the Lord as much delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice." Now let me put this in context for a minute for those who don't understand the Old Testament saga. The Old Testament saga or doctrine or philosophy said that when you sinned, the priest would offer a sacrifice of a clean animal, an unblemished animal, to take away the sins of the people. This is where this context of this verse comes from. Again, "Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams." Verse 23, "For rebellion is as the sin of divination, and insubordination is as iniquity and idolatry." I'll end this text here. "Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king." Now, to me, there's so many mini stories or side stories or sub stories in this text. But one of the big things that jumps, or actually two big things that jump out to me, is that Saul blamed the people when Saul was the leader. Big mistake there. And number two, that God was saying through Samuel that it's better to do the right thing, my paraphrase, than to have to go through the process of covering up the sins and the mistakes and the wrongdoings that you've done. So obeying is better than going through the hoops to make better the mistakes and the sins and the errors that you've made. So in other words, doing the right thing is better than trying to repair a mess up. Changing your oil in your car consistently is better than not changing your oil ever. You know, after a period of time, it catches up with you in a big way. So Saul allowed the people, in quotes, to impair his judgment. How many times haven't you and I allowed people in our lives to impair our judgment? Some people would call that peer pressure. They would allow people around them and us to distract them from a path that they know that they should be going down. So the role of the king in this text, in this story, was tarnished in the eyes of the people by Saul's actions. Let me say it again. The role of the king was tarnished in the eyes of the people by Saul's actions. So it's really, really important for you and I, even though we don't have a title of a leader, that everything we do, everything we say, everything can, maybe we think, has a potential impact on people around us. Peter Drucker was one of the greatest leadership experts of all time, in my opinion. He was very hard to understand when you would hear him speak because of his accent. But when you would read his words are very, very deep. He said there's several definitions of people who lead. He said, quote, they are the trumpet that sounds a clear sound of the organization's goals. The leader trumps, he's the trumpet blower, or she. And number two, he says a leader works. A leader works harder, or at least as hard as the people that they lead. He says that a leader sees his assignment as responsibility than a rank or somebody who has you know, a title. So many times, you've seen them and I've seen them, and I could list names of people throughout history who, once they got a title, they thought that they could sit back and just relax and let things happen. Whereas the people who have the title are the ones who typically, at least the correct use of the title, they're the ones who work around the clock. They're the ones who work the hardest and do what they need to do to get stuff done. He says a bunch of other things, but he also says that leaders set the example of integrity, because people look to the people with the title. And I've noticed something in my own life and my own experience, that when I mess up in some form or whatever it is, the ripples of the mess up are much bigger than when I do good things. It seems like the ripples of the good things, just, you don't see them very clearly. But the mess ups, man, we're talking tidal waves happen. So whether you have a title or whether you don't, every little hiccup you have in your life is amplified so much bigger, especially when you put your heart and your life and your story and your image and your words and all that out there. So you got to be super careful. I could chase that for a long, long time. Inc. magazine wrote, today, Disney is an entertainment giant of nearly unfathomable scale. It holds hundreds of properties, including Marvel Studios and the Star Wars franchise, God rest its soul. Behind the initial economy or company was the innovative, imaginative genius of Walt Disney. While many people recognize the earliest successful films, few know the difficulties he faced prior to making them. Disney's first animation studio was dissolved, and Disney couldn't even afford to pay the rent. Even after the successful premiere of Snow White and other Disney movies like Pinocchio, they were financial failures. So the lesson in this Inc. magazine article says, the strength of an idea, listen, the strength of an idea cannot be objectively measured by its relative success or failure. I believe the longer I live, that there are times and situations when the full impact of what you do won't be seen for a very long time. Because like I mentioned earlier, those good things create little ripples. The bad things, I mean, if you look at the news, that's why I purposely haven't for a long time watched local news, because it's all what? It's all bad news. The good news, the good stories are shoved to the back of the pile, which is a whole new sermon from another story, another theme. But the point is, those good things sometimes take time to really evolve into a situation where they impact people in a dramatic, dramatic way. We're talking about leadership here. We're talking about what leaders see. During the Nazi occupation of his country in World War II, King Christian X of Denmark noticed a Nazi flag flying over a Danish public building. He immediately called the German commandant, demanding that the flag be taken down at once. The commandant refused. Then a soldier will go and take it down, said the king. He will be shot, said the commandant. I think not, replied the king, for I shall be the soldier. Within minutes, the flag was taken down. So I wonder how many times, if you and I aren't that courageous to stick our neck out in such a dramatic way that things can only change because of what you do. you can delegate, you can send the email, you can send the text message, you can write a letter, you can make a phone call, but some things cannot be changed unless you step up and make those changes. And I'll say it 10 or 20 or 30 times here today. You don't need a title to be a person who leads and changes cultures, changes organizations, changes neighborhoods, changes families. Paul Borthwick writes, "You must be willing to stand alone. Oftentimes, the waves of adversity sometimes are pretty substantial, meaning that everybody in the room, everybody in the office, from high to low, does not see what you see. And sometimes you have to be willing to stand in the middle of the storm and say, you know what, I'm going to push through my concept, my idea, my image, because that's what leaders do. Number two, you must be willing to go against public opinion in order to promote what you believe. How many times have you read through history? I mean, from thousands of years ago until today. The people that are the, quote, movers and shakers do exactly that. They are the ones who speak the loudest, sometimes in ways that I don't agree with. In fact, most of the time when they do that, I'm not mentioning any names here today, but the arrogance is so ugly it takes away from the message of the person who thinks they can lead. I'll leave that as gray as I choose to be. You must be willing to risk failure. How many times haven't you met people who have lived a lifetime but have lived safely? And oftentimes for some of us who are wired in a certain way, taking risks are terrifying. And things that are terrifying, as one of four personality types, we are tempted to step back and try to push forward those people that seem to be braver, that's a word, braver than us, that have the courage and the skill sets and the personality style that can do things better than us. You must, this is a tough one for me, maybe for you, but the author says that we have to master our emotions. You know how difficult that is some days to master your emotions? Again, I could chase thoughts on that, but I'll leave that alone. And another point this author says, you have to be above reproach. And I mean, these days with technology and online stuff, I mean, you have to not only talk the talk, but you need to walk the walk. Even when you think nobody's looking, you need to walk the walk. It's really, really important. And the author says also that you need to be willing to make decisions that others won't make. We just read a story about Saul. Saul blamed the people, although Saul knew what the right thing to do was. He says, but the people did this. Well, wait. Saul was in charge. Saul was the king. Saul was the one who made policy for that country, yes? So if Saul allowed it, then in at least in God's eyes, it was okay in Saul's eyes. So then Saul got the blame for it, and the kingdom was taken away from him. And it was given away to a younger man with a humble heart. Do you hear what I'm saying here today? The author also says that you can never be content with being average. You can never be content with being average. One author, speaker said that he doesn't want to die being average and ordinary. We're talking about what leaders see. What leaders see is different than what followers see. I've seen it more times than I care to share. But the followers, could be young, could be old, see only past their nose. Maybe not past their nose, maybe up to their nose. They can't see what can happen tomorrow or next week or next year. But leaders see what's not even visible to most people. Turn with me over to 1 Kings chapter 16. 1 Kings chapter 16, starting in about verse 7. But the Lord said to Samuel, that this is after Saul was rejected as king. So now Samuel was given the role to find a new king because Saul really messed up. I mean, 1 Kings 16, around verse 7. Pardon? Did I say Saul? I'm sorry. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance. Again, but the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature. Now, think about that a second. Saul, if you know the backstory, Saul was tall. Saul was taller than most. So, of course, if it was me, if the first king was tall, then maybe the next king should be tall. Again, I'll go back to verse 7. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For God sees not as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but hear this, but God looks at the heart. Another paraphrase of this text says, but the Lord said to Samuel, don't judge by a man's face or height. Don't judge by a man's face or height, for this is not the one. I don't make decisions the way you do. Men judge by outward appearance, but I look at a man's thoughts and intentions. A man's thoughts and intentions. David was the one, not Saul, who was not afraid to take on an unbeatable enemy. Think about the story if we push past this text just a few chapters, maybe less than that, whereby David was given an opportunity to literally change the scenery, if you will, to change the hierarchy when he wasn't even he didn't even have a title yet. But remember, he was taking care of dad's sheep. He came up to run an errand. Remember that? He came up to run an errand for his dad, and he was placed in an opportunity right there to literally change the culture. And then the eyes, what changed from Saul to David. So leaders see what most of us cannot imagine. I'll say it again. Leaders see what most of us cannot imagine. Think about all of the inventors over the years. Stuff that didn't even exist. They saw it before it existed. Then they created a lifestyle. They created systems. They invented things. They worked as hard as they needed to invent something that didn't exist prior to. Richard Mao writes, he quotes this from another author. He says, the first responsibility of a leader is to define reality. I think Max Dupree said that originally. He said, leaders need to have a good picture of what is really going on around them, and they need to help others take an honest look at this reality. How many people have you met and seen throughout history are just yes men or yes people? Oh, yes. Oh, man, I could run down on that one. But again, I'll try not to get distracted. You don't want yes people in your life. You want people that challenge your thought. You want people that stretch you. You want to have people that give you angles and points of view that will give you ahas. Because yes people's really, to be very candid with you, don't help you grow.
That's right.
Because they're thinking just like you. So if they think just like you, who needs you? Who needs them? You need people to offer information that can challenge what you're doing. Once upon a time, there was a group of soldiers who were lost in the Alps, and they became lost, and they were hungry and disoriented. They argued about which way to go, but in the fading light, every peak looked exactly the same. The soldiers had no chance of surviving the night in the freezing temperatures. Suddenly, a miracle happened. One of them found a map sewn into the lining of his kit bag, and he plotted a route and marched them briskly back to base. Later, when they were warm and well-fed, the soldiers looked closer at his map. It was actually a map to some other place hundreds of miles away. It's like the old saying, when you're lost, any old map will do. Now, that's a silly kind of corny story, but oftentimes, and this sounds probably not so polite, but sometimes you act the part when internally you're scared out of your mind, if that makes any sense.
All right.
Meaning that you know the right thing to do, but you may not know exactly where you're going to end up. But right now you're in a role, you're in a situation that people are looking at you at a certain point or have a certain expectation. And you do what you do with the tools that you have. And you create the environment, a leader creates the environment that will inspire the people, when in fact, internally sometimes, you need inspiration from them. Am I making any sense to anybody?
Yeah.
There's a story. I love stories because stories really illustrate so much of what life's all about. Writer and jazz enthusiast Nat Henthoff, let me try that again, Nat Henthoff, on Duke Ellington. Ellington talked to me about his music. He composed with each musician in the band, particularly in mind, the story says. He says, you keep their weaknesses in your head as you write, and that way you astonish them with your strengths. How many times haven't you had people in your life that know what your weaknesses are, but they enlarge your strengths? So by the end of the day, or by the end of the week, or the month, or that relationship, whatever you're in, you now know that you have strengths that you didn't know that you had in the beginning of the relationship with the people or the person that you've been dealing with. The point I'm trying to make is there are people in your life that can help you blossom if you place the people in your life in certain ways and certain times. I think most of the time, you and I walk right past people who can help us blossom. And it's up to you and it's up to me to, and I'll use the sales term, it's up to you and me to recruit people to keep in our lives that will challenge us, to that will stretch us, that will enable us to do things that maybe we haven't thought about in the past. 1 Samuel chapter 16, once again. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For God sees not as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. The Living Bible puts it this way. Don't judge by a man's face or height, for this is not the one. I don't make decisions the way you do. Men judge by outward appearances, but I look at the man's thoughts and intentions. So here's an interesting criteria that has changed now between Saul and David. You see, starting now, Samuel understands that leaders were to be chosen based on what's on the inside and not what's on the outside. How many people have you been around in your own life that you see them in a certain role that you certainly did not think that they would have earned that role or grown into that role? But then you see them and then you invest the time to look at their history and look at the battles they've fought and the difficulties they've overcome and the people they've surrounded themselves with. And you look back and said, if it wasn't for all these people in their lives helping them get there, then they wouldn't be there. So in my opinion, nobody reaches the top of the mountain alone. Not even possible. Everybody gets wherever they've been with help from other people. And at least in my old age, I'm always giving credit to the people who helped, in, at least in my life, get wherever I am, if that's any place. You understand? Because you can't get there by yourself. And when you think you've gotten there by yourself, then something like happens with Saul. You get cut off because you think it's all you, because Scripture told us that Saul thought it was all him. True leaders see that they're no better than the people that they lead. I'll say it again. True leaders see that they're no better than the people that they lead. How many people have you met that have or had leadership roles that got really ugly because they thought that they were it? They thought that they were the king of the mountain and they pulled themselves up by their own bootstraps. That's some of the ugliest people on the planet. I'm not talking physically, but internally, their ugliness just oozes out because they think everything revolves around them instead of them being the biggest server, S-E-R-V-E-R, the biggest server in that culture, in that group. That's what leaders are supposed to do. I think Tim Enlow posted something. I wish I would have wrote it down. But he said, true people who lead wash people's feet the most often. That's the paraphrase of what Tim said. Not to have titles or crowns or kings, that doesn't do diddly squat. Over 200 years, a great example of this, 200 years ago, a man in regular street clothes rode past a small group of tired and battled, weary soldiers. They were digging what appeared to be an important defensive position. The leader of the group wasn't making any effort to help. He just shouted orders and threatened to punish the group if the work wasn't completed within an hour. That's pretty intense. "Why aren't you helping?" the stranger asked, who was on horseback. "I'm in charge." "The men do as I tell them," said the leader. He added, "Help them yourself if you feel so strongly about it." To the mean leader's surprise, the stranger got off his horse and helped the men until the job was finished. Before he left, the stranger congratulated the men. Listen to this. Before he left, the stranger congratulated the men for their work and approached the confused leader. "You should notify top command next time your rank prevents you from supporting your men, and I will provide a more permanent solution," the stranger said. Up close, the now humbled leader recognized General George Washington and was taught a lesson he will never forget. It was the stranger on the horse, General Washington, who got off the horse and helped the men do their job. That's what leaders do. That's what leaders are supposed to do. Mark chapter 12 writes this: "To love him with all your heart, with all your understanding," let's talk about loving God. To love him with all your heart, with all your understanding, and with all your strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself is more important than burnt offerings and sacrifices. It just makes it so simple in such a short phrase. Let me share it again. To love God with all your heart, with all your understanding, with all your strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself is more important than the burnt offerings and sacrifices. It just makes it so simple, doesn't it? Leaders see what is the right thing to do and to have the courage to do it. Leaders see what the right thing is to do and have the courage to do it. Leaders see what most of us can't even imagine. Think about that. The people in your own workplace, the leaders see what most of us can't even imagine. If you or leaders or potential leaders don't see what's going around you, then we may not be able to impact the people that we could impact, even though we're around them all the time. Because you and I are in a place, we're in a workplace, we're in an environment, we're in a neighborhood, we're in a group, we're in some sort of forum on purpose to make a difference in people's lives. So if we don't take advantage, the point is, if we don't take advantage of the opportunities that are around us every day to lead from the position we're in. Some people think you need to lead from the top. You don't lead from the top. You lead from anywhere on the hierarchy. I'll borrow Mark's quote. You don't need a title to be a leader. You really, really don't. What you don't notice and what you miss can get you hurt or killed. What you don't notice or what you miss can get other people hurt or killed. So you have to be a noticer. You have to be somebody who pays attention. How many times haven't you bypassed certain situations, or you're in the car and your mind's 100 miles away and you miss certain things that are going around you when the people in the car who are passengers see it, because they're not focused, meaning that sometimes we choose, because of life and difficulties and distractions, we don't choose to focus on the stuff around us that can literally impact the people all around us. Leaders look for ways to improve what's going on around them. Leaders look for ways that improves what's going on around them. Those who lead are specialists in taking bad news and reframing it in a way that followers see it as opportunity. Let me say it again. Leaders are specialists in taking the bad news and reframing it in a way where their followers see opportunity. Turn to Numbers chapter 13. Numbers chapter 13 is a prime old example of this exact point. And I'm not going to read all of it, but I'll read part of it. Numbers chapter 13, starting in about verse 25, this is when a group of people were about to move into a new part of the world, and these guys were sent out to spy out the land for a month and a half-ish, 40 days, right? They were sent out. So most of them came back you know, and said that, you know, there's a lot of bad guys. There's some really, really bad guys over there. But down in verse 30, not Numbers chapter 13, now verse 30, then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "We should by all means go up and take possession of it, for we will surely overcome it." Verse 31. But the men who had gone up with him and said, "We are not able to go against the people, for they're too strong for us." So they gave out to the sons of them inhabitants, and they saw them. They were of great size. Verse 33. There were also, they saw these big guys, and we became grasshoppers in their sight. And so we were in their sight. So what they saw, they assumed that they couldn't overtake it. How many times have you seen stuff in your own life that you thought you couldn't overtake it, you thought that you couldn't overcome it, until somebody reframed it for you? I had a text conversation this morning with somebody about that. Because if you choose to reframe what's going on, or what was going on, or what is going on, the whole angle changes. How many times have you looked at something differently, and the whole situation changed because of how you looked at it, because of how you reframed it? So the few saw the glass as half full, and the majority saw the glass as half empty, or totally empty. So my suggestion to you and to me is to make sure that you keep people in your life that remind you that the glass is half full. That is a big deal. Because some of us struggle with the glass, at least in our own mind, that our glass is half empty all the time. So you have to keep people in situations and set your life up in a way that remind you that the glass is half full. Paul Griesley shares that leaders make investments in learning. This is a really big deal. People who lead, again, whatever role you're in, wherever you are in the hierarchy, invest in getting better every day. Because what I found is that atrophy comes into the situation very quickly. When you don't develop daily, then you weaken daily. And I think, at least in my own world, that you weaken faster than you strengthen, meaning it takes a lot longer to build the strength and it goes a lot faster to lose the strength. Again, that's another story and another example I could go in for a half an hour on. Leaders see each person, this author says, as in God's image, or they see people that God can do things in their lives that they can't even imagine. So how many times have you looked at certain people and thought, you know, there's no way they could develop to do this, or there's no way that they could? So you've reframed them in such a way, or you frame them in such a way that there's no hope for that person. Whereas God sees the potential in almost everybody. Leaders encourage others to see things differently. Leaders encourage others to see things differently. They see things through not only their eyes and their experience, but I think more importantly, the experience of people that they've studied and they've read about, because leaders always invest in getting better. So the leaders who invest in getting better certainly understand that they haven't reached the top by themselves. They've stood on the shoulders of giants who stood on the shoulders of giants who stood on the shoulders of giants and wiser people than them. Why do leaders see things that differently? Leaders see opportunities disguised as difficulties. And I'll get to that when I'm stopping the recording and sharing some awesome news with you all here today. There's another story about Walt Disney, who died 6 years before the opening of Disney World. At the opening ceremony, two Disney executives were sitting together. One said, "Too bad, Walt couldn't have been here to see this." And the other replied, "You're wrong. Walt did see it. That's why it's here." So many of us forget that you have to see it before it becomes a reality. If you don't see it before it becomes a reality, then guess what happens? You bypass every, or at least many, opportunities to make stuff happen because you're not looking for it, because you didn't think or don't think it was possible for it to happen. So if you have an expectation of something to happen, then you look for ways to make that happen, whatever that is. And then more importantly, and that's off topic, off notes, then you create a why behind it. You create why, you're looking for the what. Because when your why is bigger than your what, then anything's possible. That's another sermon that I'm jumping into here. Eric Garner writes, leaders do more than have a vision of what's possible. They articulate it and draw others in. They do this through metaphor, images, and triggering the innate desire of all people to really change people's lives. He shared an example. Compare the visions of two soft drink companies back in the 1920s. One was a Boston-based company called Moxies, M-O-X-I-E-S. Their stated aim was to sell herb-based drinks. Nothing to get excited about there. The other company's vision was to, quote, to quench the thirst of a nation. That company was Coca-Cola. Today, nobody remembers Moxies. It's all about framing. It's all about setting an image. It's all about putting a picture. That's what Jesus did all the time. I shared that a week or two ago. He shared stories. He created images in people's minds and their hearts to point them in a direction that he was trying to get them to go to when dictating to them wasn't necessarily the path that he should have taken. So he started to tell stories. Turn over to Luke chapter 18. Luke chapter 18, Jesus noticed those who were at the bottom of society's hierarchy. I'm in Luke chapter 18, Living Bible. Verse 9, starting in verse 9. Then he told this story to some who boasted of their virtue and scorned everyone else. He said in verse 10, two men went to the temple to pray. One was a proud, self-righteous Pharisee. I'm in Luke 18. And the other, a cheating tax collector. The proud Pharisee prayed this prayer. Thank God I am not a sinner like everyone else, especially like that tax collector over there. For I never cheat, I don't commit adultery, I go without food twice a week, and I give a tenth of everything I earn. Verse 13. But the corrupt tax collector stood at a distance and dared not even lift his eyes to heaven as he prayed, but beat upon his chest in sorrow, exclaiming, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, the sinner, not the Pharisee, returned home forgiven. For the proud shall be humbled, but the humbled shall be honored. Verse 15. One day some mothers brought their babies to him, to Christ, to touch and bless. But the disciples told him to go away. Then Jesus called the children over to him and said to the disciples, let the children come to me. Never send them away. For the kingdom of God, belongs to men who have hearts as trusting as these little children's. And anyone who doesn't have their kind of faith will never get within the kingdom's gates. Again, Jesus flipped it all around because the religious and the mighty wanted to hang out with the mighty and the religious, right? Jesus chose to turn it all on its head and said that, you know what, I'm as comfortable with those that don't have a title. In that culture, children were nothing. Women were property in that culture. They didn't have a say. But Jesus felt as comfortable with them as he did. In fact, he felt more comfortable with them than he did with the religious because he called the religious folk some nasty names in that culture. Think about that and imagine what it looked like to the religious people, what Jesus was doing. What did it look like to the religious folks to see what Jesus was doing? And Jesus was called a rabbi. Jesus was a teacher. Jesus was of them or of that group, in quotes. But he did things totally different. And we're still talking about him 2,000 years after that. There's a true story that happened in 1892 over at Stanford University. An 18-year-old student was struggling to pay his fees. He was an orphan and not knowing where to turn for money. So he came up with a bright idea. A friend and he decided to host a musical concert on campus to raise money for their education. They reached out to the greatest pianist, Ignacy E., and then his last name, I'll try to pronounce it, Paderewski. His manager demanded a guaranteed fee of $2,000 for the piano recital. A deal was struck, and the boys began to work to make the concert a success. The big day arrived, and Paderewski performed at Stanford, but unfortunately, they had not managed to sell enough tickets. The total collection was only $1,600. Disappointed, they went to the pianist and explained their plight. They gave him the entire $1,600 plus a check for the balance of $400. They promised to honor the check as soon as possible. "No," said the pianist, "this is not acceptable." He tore up the check, returned the $1,600, and told the two boys, "Here's the $1,600. Please deduct whatever expenses you have incurred. Keep the money you need for your fees, and just give me whatever is left." The boys were surprised and thanked him profusely. It was a small act of kindness, but it clearly marked out that this pianist was a great human being. Why should he help two boys he did not even know? We all come from situations like these, the storyteller says, and most of us only think, if I help them, what would happen to me? The truly great people think that. They don't do it expecting something in return. They do it because they feel it's the right thing to do. This is what leaders do, right? They do it because it's the right thing to do. The storyteller goes on. So the pianist later went on to become the prime minister of Poland. He was a great leader, but unfortunately, when the World War II began, Poland was ravaged. There were more than 1.5 million starving people in his country and no money to feed them. So the former pianist did not know where to turn for help. He reached out to the U.S. Food and Relief Administration for help. The head was there at that department was a man named Herbert Hoover, who later went on to become president of the United States. Hoover agreed to help and quickly shipped tons of food grains to feed the starving Polish people. A calamity was averted. The pianist was relieved. He decided to go across to meet Hoover and personally thank him. When the pianist began to thank Hoover for his noble gesture, Hoover quickly interjected and said, "You shouldn't be thanking me, Mr. Prime Minister. You may not remember this, but several years ago, you helped two young students go through college in the United States, and I was one of them." So I'll close with, there is no one too unimportant to be a leader. If I would have known, and I could go into great detail here, but I'll restrain myself. The people that you think, based on how they're acting, based on their behavior, based on their temperament and their history, I think that they can't become somebody great, I want you to look at them again from a different set of glasses. Then, in fact, they can be molded and shaped into people that can change a planet, that can change a world. So what do leaders see? Leaders see what others overlook. Leaders see the potential in other people. Leaders see the pain in people's lives and try to bring healing. That's what leaders do. Leaders put others ahead of themselves always. And finally, the big question for today is, will you choose to be a leader? Will you choose to be a leader? I'm so fired up about my fourth book that came out. It's called Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks for a Successful and Rewarding Life. I've compressed about 25 years of knowledge, experience, and learning from a lot of people to help you in your life. You can get a copy of it over at TremendousLifeBooks.com. Again, TremendousLifeBooks.com. Here's some more information about it. For the last 25 years, I've visited with thousands of people in their homes. Many of these people I've met with have no goals, no dreams, no ambitions, and no roadmap for their life. I've seen so many people sitting on their front porches watching life go by. In 2006, my wife and I started building our home with bedrooms for each of our six kids. I always made sure that the foundation of our home was solid. I didn't want to take any chances with the lives of my family. So it is with life. My book, Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks of a Successful, Rewarding Life, is jammed full of ideas that can help you today. My book is a collection of ideas and
And short stories really designed to help you turn your life around and to help impact the people that you care about and that you love so much. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you've already built your life but need to shore up some weak spots, Build Your Foundation will help you fortify yourself for a lifetime of success and to give you the courage to go for your dreams in life. Don't miss out on what you can accomplish. You can scale any height and achieve any goal. This book will help you get there. I have a passion to help millions of people change their lives. This book is easy to read, has short chapters, and can help you right now and change your life today. I believe in you. Thank you so much for listening to the John Carver Show. If you want more information about me, just simply go to my website, www.johnwcarver.com. Again, thanks so much for listening to the show today, and remember, I believe in you.
Thank you for listening to the John Carver Show. Please tune in again right here Monday through Friday for more insights and opinions on how you can reach your goals and dreams in life.